Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the Fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling at Hotcakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like?
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, and a special welcome to the newly arrived university students in Cambridge. We hope you're tuned in. And if you're not feeling hungry, you soon will be, because we've got an hour of local food and drink news and stories coming up. I'm Matt Bentman, here in the studio with Alan Alder and Sue Bailey.
One of the real favourites on the Cambridge food scene is Tristan Welch, partly from his work when he was chef director at Parker's Tavern. But where's he been for the last couple of years? Well, he's here on today's programme to tell us and to give us a glimpse of what he has in mind for the future.
A couple of months ago, Tim Hayward, co-owner of Fitzbillies, broadcaster and food writer, was with us talking about his new book, Steak. And he mentioned a source of meat in Cambridge that was very impressive. In fact, he said,
"This is some of the most astonishing meat in the world."
Today, we find out more about that meat, including the new box scheme and the one restaurant that has it, which means you can get some.
In all our programmes, we feature where you can get free food in and around Cambridge. The information comes from the Olio app, and today we talk to one of the Cambridge people who help us to get that food for you.
And we'll have our regular updates, free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates, and, at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup. But first, that meat. When we talked to Tim Hayward in June about his new book, Steak, he lamented the fact that increasingly beef cattle aren't grass-fed but corn-fed and kept in pens to restrict movement. It reduces the eating quality of the meat. It's what happens in the USA, and even Argentinian beef is corn-fed.
So I went all the way to Manhattan to go and eat a USDA prime steak, and it was a 20-ounce steak. It's a huge thing. And the first time you put it in your mouth, you nearly want to weep, because it's just so like meat-flavoured butter. You know, it's running out of the corners of your mouth and down and setting in your beard. It's unbelievably tender and well-marbled and has that sort of steaky flavour. And an hour and a half later, you're still eating the bloody thing and it hasn't changed. It's just, it has no coloration, no nuance, no nothing. So it's like big and flashy, but it doesn't have any nuance to it. Whereas, you know, an animal like the one I enjoyed most of all, which was in near Bilbao, it was called they call them bues, and a bue is an ox, which is an animal that's lived a productive life, sometimes 20 years or more, earning its money not by just putting on weight and body mass and then being killed for meat. It spent 20 years being a tractor on a farm, pulling a plow, eating grass, being fed, put out to work, eat, feed, stand up, work. That meat tastes full of character, it's complex, it's fascinating, it's like a really delicious wine. The texture takes some work, you've got to chew on the damn thing, but we sliced it up and it was so good, it was so fulfilling, it was so enjoyable. It was like eating an entirely different product. And we have, weirdly, in England, we have still got an enormous amount of high quality grass rearing going on.
And there is a local source of grass-fed beef, and it is fed on grass all the year round. It's from animals that live out in the open all year in all weathers. They're from the Wandering Herd, beautifully named, especially since they began at Wandlebury. And now they can be found at other locations in and around Cambridge, including at Trumpington Meadows, where I went to see them with owner Ed Womwell. It's an idyllic location, and if you shut your eyes to the sounds from the M11 blowing across, you could well be in the land of George Eliot or some other 19th century pastoral English writer. They're in a meadow with an abundance of varied plant life. There was a blue sky and cotton wool clouds, and their job is to maintain the meadow as a wildflower meadow, to keep it just like that. We're walking over towards these cattle. What kind of... These are belted Galloways, aren't they? I recognise them.
Yes, definitely.
They're very distinctive.
They are, yeah. So the big black and white things.
And one of them seeing us coming. I can see it's looking this way anyway.
Yeah, well, they know what's coming. I've got a little bit of a treat for them
today.
Oh,
have you? What have you got?
So we've got a little bit of rolled barley and some spent barley grain, actually.
And they like that sort of thing,
they
do they?
They do, yeah. It's local as well. So it comes from Cambridgeshire, the brew board.
Oh, does it?
So we're right. recycling. So, yeah, this is just a little bit of a treat to entice them over, and so we can just check them over and see if they're happy and healthy.
Right, OK. And why Belted Galloway, Ed?
We're mainly a conservation grazing unit. So the Galloways, they're a hardy, native Scottish breed, so they're as tough as anything. These guys will be outside year-round. And you can see, you mentioned that coat already, but you can see it's a nice curly coat.
Yeah.
They've actually got a downy underlayer as well, so they've got two coats. These guys will never be inside their entire lives. So, yeah, it's those conditions.
And they're all coming over.
They're all coming over, yeah. They all know what's coming. So this is all part of the training for them, so...
OK, well, let's...
I'll start to get some food out, and
okay,
then
I'll watch.
Come a little bit closer.
So this, presumably you're not doing this out of the goodness of your heart, or are you? Is there a purpose behind giving them the treat?
Training, really. I like to tell people, it's like offering me a hobnob. I'll do whatever you say for a hobnob. So their diet consists of 99.9% is outside, out here, wildflowers, wild grasses. But just the occasional treat, we can bring them in. They can come over, get closer to us. We can check their health condition. This is nice and open here. Some of the other conservation sites that we graze, like Fulbourne Fen, we've just moved on to as well. There's a lot more tree cover, shrubs. So just be able to shake a bucket and get them to come out, and we can count them and check them that way.
Right. And I suppose it helps human-animal relationships as well. They know to trust you.
Absolutely. The way that we handle them is high welfare, really sort of sensitive. Get to know each individual animal and their own personalities. So Jasper here, who's just come up, he's the big bull, big friendly bull. I know he's hungry. It keeps them nice and calm, no stress.
So they have a nice life, Ed. And what's the meat like? I know Tim Hayward speaks very highly of it.
Yeah, no, Tim's been a huge support and really opened our eyes to it. The primary aim for us was always conservation grazing, but to be able to sustain that, obviously meat had to come into the equation. I think we always knew it was going to be good. You know, they have a fantastic diet on all these wildflowers and wild grasses on our nature reserves. But that's what we were conservation graziers, not salesmen. So to have, you know, the feedback from our first batch been overwhelming, really. It kind of, I suppose it makes sense to us. Once, we'd eaten it ourselves, it was incredible. The feedback from everyone has been fantastic. Because they are, so eating all this huge variety of wildflowers.
And all the year round as well.
All year round. Yeah. As I say, there's no handling yards, no extra compound feeds or anything like that. It's very, very natural.
Right. And we're all going to be able to get our hands on it through your box scheme. Has the box scheme started yet?
Yes. So, again, we're saying we're not a commercial, so we only have availability limited throughout the year. But we do have some coming to age at the moment. Our boxes will be available to order from us very soon. Yeah, we're starting to take pre-orders.
Right. But you're not selling via butcher shops?
We've trialled it. I think for us to be able to get the best value and really to explain the full story about what they're doing and how they're doing it, we think direct to consumer. It certainly helps us out. We're able to invest more into the herd. And again, part of our education element as well, we get to talk to people and show people where they are, where they've come from. So it's just about one step closer, really.
Yeah. So has there been a lot of interest? I mean, it's early days, actually, isn't it?
It is early days, but there's been a lot of interest, more than we were expecting, really. Which is fantastic. A lot of support for what we're doing and why we're doing it. Again, it's very emotive. So unfortunately, you can't see it at the moment, but standing out in fields like this, open to the public, people can engage with us and see what we're doing. And by buying the meat, it's supporting the wider Habitat Works as well. So it's there's something more than just dinner.
Because this sort of grazing helps the habitat.
Absolutely, yeah. So it is conservation grazing. The reason why they are here is to improve the biodiversity and bioabundance of these nature reserves, and they play a key management component in that,
right.
Definitely.
Okay. I didn't ask you the question, which is quite important for a lot of people. What about the price of the meat? Is it premium priced as a premium product?
I think it's reasonable. So we charge, at the moment, sort of entry prices to get going, about £150 for a box, which is roughly 10 kilograms, so like a cow share.
So £15 a kilo. Yeah.
Yeah. As I say, we're not a commercial unit, so you can tell by the long walk that we've had to get here. There's a lot of work involved in doing this. We move them around a lot. We go around to a lot of nature reserves. So it's... The meat side of things really is a byproduct, so we're trying to recover costs so that we can carry on managing these sites.
Yeah. But if you're getting good feedback, you're getting a lot of interest, it sounds like you're on a winner to me.
Well, we've been getting fantastic feedback. I mean, I'm blushing when I say it. as I say, when Tim Hayward's been saying that we've got some of the best, if not the best beef in the world, it makes you blush. And when I'm not a salesperson, it does make me uncomfortable, but I'm very proud. My family's very proud of it. Everyone who's involved. It has become a real privilege to be able to work with them, and then to be able to supply some this quality of beef locally.
It's just fantastic.
It's incredible.
Ed, it's just fantastic. It's a really good story. And it sounds like you don't need to be a salesman. The cattle are doing it for you.
We do, yeah. You have to excuse that, yes, I'm not a salesman. I let them do the talking, and let the meat do the talking, and so far they seem to be doing very well. So, yeah, thank you.
Brilliant. Anyway, nice to meet you, Ed.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Take care.
And here's an excerpt from what Tim Hayward said about it on Flavour in June.
But this is some of the most astonishing meat in the world. This doesn't exist anywhere else. This is a working animal with a long life. You pay, it doesn't really matter, it's about the same amount of money as you would for a reasonable quality steak. But it's like, that is the most amazing story. And this herd is now moving around. There's now more and more of these sustainable, low-impact herds moving around the country doing their job. They get paid because they're living their life. The last one, I said, this is great meat. I said, he said, yeah, he's only seen a vet twice in its life. Once when it was born, and once, because they all get seen by a vet after they're slaughtered, it gets examined by a vet. He said, they've never had an injection. They've never had any supplements to their diet. They've just eaten wildflowers and been their happy selves. And I just think that is just such a incredible story. It's so rare. It's so, but you know, we're starting to talk about this stuff. People like you and I will talk about this like we would talk about a good wine or a really, really well-made loaf of bread or something like that. So I think the more we talk about it, the more we educate, the more we think, then I think it helps. Life is too short to eat crap steak.
That's very true. The Wandering Herd is on Instagram, and we'll be bringing more information about their box scheme in our news section, which is coming up shortly. And it's on the menu at the Chequers in Falmere. Sounds good, yeah? Do you know the Chequers in Falmere, Sue? Is that a place you go to?
I do, but I haven't been there recently. But now I know they're having it, I think I shall go.
I might see you there.
Indeed.
And now details of free food available in and around Cambridge, and the information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, which exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Claudia, who lives out on Beaumont Road, has plenty of baguette breads available, seeded, stone-baked and white flute. Kev, near the airport, picked up some Too Good To Go items recently, and he's giving them away here, including things like a cheese ploughman's, a char-grilled chicken sandwich, and some of those yum-yum donut-style things. Whilst Simone, near the Beehive Centre, is offering some coriander and mint sauce. And I know I talk about this quite often, so just to give you an example of what's available on other days. So just last night, for example, there was piles of bananas were being given away. There were lots of ham, tuna and cheese rolls, jelly and yoghurt pots, salads, pasta pots, loads of different sandwiches, tuna and cucumber, ham and cheese baguettes, a few bags of organic coffee, and lots of pret-a-manger items too. So it's always worth checking out Olio, no matter what the day.
That's fantastic that you can get bags of organic coffee for nothing, isn't it? I mean, they last for a long time as well.
Yeah. They do.
But what are yum-yum donut type things?
Well, the best way I can describe them is like a ring donut that's rolled out flat.
Oh.
So it's just like a tube or a twist.
Sweet, not savoury.
Oh, yeah, it's sweet, just like a donut. Mm.
You'll have to bring one in, Matt. You'll have to phone up earlier and get one for us. Anyway, the other free app, which is what Matt just mentioned, Too Good To Go, has unsold food from restaurants and shops, and it's often at less than half price, and often considerably less than half price. And rather than specifying each leftover item, the surplus food is just packaged as a magic bag and it's ready for you to take home. And that's instead of it going in the bin. Some of the companies that have used it recently, very recently, include the Clayton Hotel, Namaste in Market Hill, and a lot of places at the station or in Station Square, for example, the Ibis Hotel, Marks & Spencer, Pret, Upper Crust, West Cornwall Pasty Company. In Cherry Hinton Road, Budgeons and Greggs use it. Outside Cambridge, the Oakington Garden Centre's Cafe. One stop in Willingham, Jamaica Blue in Melbourne. And back in Cambridge, the Hotel Du Van, the Cambridge Oven in Hills Road, Norfolk Street Bakery in Station Road. And there's lots of others too. It's extraordinary.
Lovely. Let's move on to our first news break now, starting with Eliminata, which has opened in Victoria Avenue, selling sandwiches that use butter that it makes on site. It also takes bread from Stir Bakery and produce from Wild Country Organics and other top producers. They do a variety of food and drinks, and they've got a selection of vinyl too. They're open from 9 till 3, Wednesday to Saturday.
And Flourish has added a new pickup place in Cambridge for its weekly veg box. It's King Street Cellars, which we featured on last time's programme. And yes, King Street Cellars is in King Street. And you can pick up your box there on Saturdays between 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Meanwhile, Hidden by Pudini has a supper club on the 11th of October, cooked by Chef Alex Harris. The menu includes scallop ceviche and char-grilled sirloin of beef.
And as part of Black History Month, Cambridge Central Library has a recipe swap on the 12th of October. It's a drop-in event and no booking is needed, and afterwards, for the rest of the month, there'll be a display of the recipes.
Cambridge Juice Company has a 15% off pure OT products this month, and that includes its range of granolas and other cereals and non-dairy milks. And there's big savings on plenty of other products too.
Finboys will be closed at the Gog Farm Shop tomorrow, Sunday.
And then Ben Selston has a coffee toasting and brunch at the Catch Coffee House in Knapwell on the 12th of October at 9:30.
Caxton Farmers Market takes place on the 13th of October. Traders include Crafts Butcher from Ellsworth with Jagyu beef, which is a cross between a Jersey milk cow and a Japanese Wagyu. And Crafts Butcher is the only outlet for this in Cambridgeshire.
And on the subject of meat, as we heard earlier, the Wandering Herd is supplying beef boxes with meat from its belted Galloway cattle, which graze outside all the year round on grasses and wildflowers in places such as Wandlebury, Trumpeton Meadows and Barnwell Meadows. To find out when the boxes go on sale and how to get one, send them a direct message on Instagram or email hellowanderingherd@gmail.com. And we'll have more news later.
OK, on to our next feature. And a regular and very welcome guest on Flavour used to be Tristan Welch when he was chef director at Parker's Tavern. He left, and he did a lot of very informative reels on social media about reducing food waste. But he has been involved in other projects too, and Alan spoke with him this week about what he's been up to and what the future might hold.
Hi, Tristan. I wonder if I could ask you about what you've been doing recently and what you're
future plans are. But first, a lot of us still miss you, you know, from Parker's Tavern. And think about why it happened, why you've left.
You know, like all good things, they've got to come to an end. And my time was up on that contract. So I wanted to have a sort of quiet exit, if you like. And yeah, my last night was Burns night. It was Burns night, sell out. I took a massive haggis into the whole restaurant and served it to everybody and had a jolly nice glass of whiskey afterwards.
Just the one.
Yeah, which they charged me for, actually. Yeah, but I'll be back. I'll be back on the Cambridge scene soon enough.
Oh, right. Well, we'll ask you about that later. Yeah. That's very encouraging. But what have you been doing in the meantime?
I was planning to take some time off, but like all good friends, they get in contact, and I've started a couple of really exciting projects. Got one in Rochdale, believe it or not. A couple of contracts in London as well, one in Dubai. And then, of course, there's other sort of like social media commitments and bits and bobs like that. So I've been busy, busy.
So the contracts being what, helping restaurants set up or?
Well, yes. So the one in Rochdale is a community project supported by the Lottery Fund and the Heritage Fund of regenerating Rochdale Town Hall. I was initially invited just to interview for chefs. So to help get an executive chef within the building to help build the business. But when I got there, I did see that actually there was not a lot else done. They needed a bit of help. So I said, do you want me to come back next week and I'll help you with a business plan and a vision? So I started with building the concept for them, the business plan, which will help with the sort of funding and stuff like that. And it became a really lovely community project built around local people, their heritage, their culinary heritage as well, which is super exciting.
Yeah, a fantastic building. I got married in that building, so I do know.
Did you? You got married in there? I mean, I've got to say, it's one of the most beautiful buildings in the UK. Gold-painted wallpaper, gold-painted ceiling, in fact, like that. Mm. It's an incredible example of the rich heritage that Rochdale has. And then, yep, I work in London as well. I create nutritional menus for a high-end care home, or high-end care homes now, and there's another three more opening up in the future. We're looking at menus in a slightly different way and making sure they're avoiding ultra-processed food, having a real nutritional advantage in terms of what they eat and stuff like that. It's super important to, when you're getting to a certain age, to eat with cognitive function in mind and muscle regrowth and all that sort of stuff. And my job is to take all that sort of information and make it palatable and acceptable for an elderly palate. And also, I like having a cup of tea and a biscuit with the old ladies in the afternoon.
Well, when you were at Parker's Tavern, you often used to come into the restaurant and chat to people. I thought that was a really nice feature, actually. And I was going to ask you if you miss that sort of thing, and therefore, would you like to be back in the restaurant?
Yeah, absolutely. I love hospitality. I love people to come in and have a great time. And I love cooking and I love talking. So, yeah, right, so absolutely.
You said that there might be something in Cambridge in the future?
Absolutely, in the future. I'm taking my time. We're going to get the right site and the right concept that works for that site. So we're looking for sites and we're looking for key individuals to support in that as well, that I'm happy to support. As you know, there's been a couple of sites I've looked in the local area already. It's got to have community in mind. Because, you know, I'm from here, I live here, the people that I grew up with are all around here, so I want to be part of that community. I like to be part of that community. And a restaurant is really, or a cafe, or a lunch spot is really important.
Right.
A part of that sort of DNA. So
when you say you're taking it slowly, you're waiting for the... I mean, have you got a sort of hope, you know, do you hope it's going to be in the next 6 months, year, 2 years?
I definitely hope it's in the next 2 years. Let's see. It depends on the site. If the site comes up, I'll press the button and we'll go. Yeah. But if the site doesn't come up, it's not 100%, or the fit's just not 100% right, there's no point rushing into these things. But you'll be the first to know, Alan. You'll be the first to know. Well, After the bank manager, probably. You know me, and I'm very passionate about... So I'm from a fine dining heritage, but I'm super passionate about a beautiful cup of coffee and a cinnamon bun or a lovely croissant. Just as passionate as I am about a smashed burger or a focaccia sandwich or some of that, you know. So there's lots of concepts to do. So, you know, I don't know.
Just good.
Maybe there'll be a couple. Maybe there'll be a couple. Who knows?
Oh, well.
Well, let's get one first, right? Let's get one first. if it's a site for a cafe, it'll be a cafe. If it's a site for a restaurant, it'll be a restaurant. I'm not going to...
And you'll be hands-on there. You'll be in there, will you?
Of course. Well, I'll have to be. I have to be. I can't help myself.
Okay. Right, can I ask you a few quick-fire questions?
I'll try and be my quickest.
Favourite restaurant?
Favourite restaurant? In Cambridge, Van der Lyle. Outside of Cambridge? It's like trying to choose your favourite child. I couldn't do it.
Type of coffee? Flat white, latte, cappuccino?
Oh, pour over filter.
Wine? Red, white, rosé?
I don't drink wine very often anymore, but when I do... it's got to be a worthwhile bottle. I've got a real taste for a decent Chardonnay or like a Burgundy or something like that.
TV chef?
Keith Floyd. It's the best. He used to go to the markets, get fresh produce and just cook it. And well, that's what I love about it.
Hugely entertaining, I agree. Yeah.
And he was drunk.
Yeah, it was good fun. TV food programme?
Rick Stein's Odyssey of the Sea, I like that. I can still watch it. Yeah. I can still watch it. These days, I do like Saturday Kitchen because it moves with the times. I really enjoy that. I like Michelle Roux Jr.'s new series, Going Up and Down the River Thames. That's lovely. But, you know, then I like some old school stuff as well. Oh, Instagram, it's don't eat before watching this. Check that out. Right. That's really cool. That's really cool. They're old interviews of chefs in the kitchen, and the lighting's bad quite often, but the food and the cuisine's really cool. It's super interesting. Okay. Don't eat before watching this. Check that out.
Will do. Cookbook.
Oh, so many. So many. The ones I keep referring to would be Rue Patisserie. It's an absolute classic. It really is. La Rousse Gastronomique is always super useful as well. And 1,000 Indian Recipes. It's a book that's in an old rice bag. And the photography is amazing. It makes you hungry every time you want to, you open it up and all that sort of stuff as well. Enjoying Tim Hayward's Steak book as well. Excellent. And the man's a genius.
Beautifully written, I think.
Yeah, beautifully written. Yeah, don't tell him I said that.
Right, and no cookbook from you on the way? You're too busy?
I'm the king of half a cookbook. Because I fell in love with the Rue Patisserie book from a young age. It was such an integral part of my growing up as a chef. And it sits on my shelf and it's got dirty, worn pages. And it's just such a useful book. I always refer back to that, and I would like to write a book that would be that useful. Mm. And I thought I had it last year, and I wrote it, The Rubbish Cooks Cookbook. But no one picked it up. It was quite sad, really.
Yes, that is sad.
It is sad, yeah. There's there's a book full of tips and tricks how to save money, reduce food waste, and actually improve your dinners a little bit as well.
Well, I mean, your Instagram postings on that were just fantastic. Just really useful.
Over 100 million views.
Good.
Over 100 million views. It was incredible. But not enough views for a book, apparently. There we go. So we'll wait and see. Who knows?
Maybe the time will come.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'm in no hurry. But if I do get the chance to have a published cookbook, I would work relentlessly until I felt it was one of those cookbooks that just get referred to time and time again.
Right. So we might have some good things to look forward to. a restaurant or cafe in Cambridge and a cookbook from you.
You could do, yeah, you never know.
Right, well, we'll live in hope.
If not, you'll see me around the street corners causing chaos as always.
Great stuff. Okay, lovely to see you again, Tristan.
Thanks for having me on.
Right, thank you.
Well, it was so nice to meet up with Tristan again, and I do hope he starts something up in the Cambridge area soon.
Oh, so do I, and it was so nice to hear all the things he's been up to. And I love the idea of the Tristan Welch Bible of patisserie, perhaps? We'll see. I mean, he's got so many ideas and he's such a creative guy.
Well, I'm amazed that the rubbish cookbooks hasn't been taken up by anybody. You know, it's sort of on trend, isn't it, really? Yeah. Not wasting stuff. And also people haven't got as much money as they used to have. You would have thought it would be the sort of book that would do really well.
I know, and it's a great title too. So,
If Sarah Lavelle is listening, why aren't Quadrille publishing it, Sarah?
Yeah, Sarah.
That's what we want to know.
Question.
Come on the programme and tell us.
Well, in the second half of Flavour Today, we'll be talking to one of the people in Cambridge who helped to provide the Fee Food via the Olio app. And with lots more food and drink news too, what it's like to be a restaurant reviewer for a national daily, updates from social media, and our jobs section. Don't go away, we'll be back in 1 minute.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hey, did you know that whenever you make a payment online, you could help raise funds to keep Cambridge 105 Radio thriving with just a couple taps on your keyboard? From Amazon, John Lewis, Etsy and H&M, Easy Fundraising will donate part of what you spend to us at no extra cost to you. Sign up now at cambridge105.co.uk/easyfundraising and make a difference to the community with Cambridge 105 Radio.
For a great range of electrical goods, visit urboturbo25.com. We're a top-rated online retailer based in St. Neots that's trusted by thousands of UK customers for the past 10 years. We stock a wide selection of kitchen appliances, vacuum cleaners, power tools, personal care items, phone accessories, and much, much more. We offer free shipping, and most of our items are available for next-day delivery. Check out our 100% feedback rating on Amazon and eBay. Visit us today at urboturbo25.com. That's urboturbo25.com. We are 105.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to Flavour. And some more food and drink news now. And we begin with Mark Poynton of MJP at the Shepherd's. He's got a game dinner on the 16th of October with matching wines from Hallgarten Wines. There will be 5 courses with snacks on arrival. The cost for that is £95. And looking ahead, Mark has another special dinner meal based on the collection from Colette Champagne. This will be on the 5th of December, where there will be 6 courses and snacks on arrival at £125 per person. Booking for that is underway.
The Wine Rooms in Hills Road is hosting an organic garden pop-up on October the 24th, which has sold out very quickly. So an additional date has been arranged, which is on the 23rd of October. It's at 7 p.m. and it's a night of casual fine dining with 5 courses. Organic Kitchen is a family team with more than 20 years in hospitality, including at Michelin-starred restaurants. Tickets are £40 plus an Eventbrite fee, and matched wine flights are available for purchase on the night.
Opening soon in Eddington is La Pizzica, which will be serving traditional Neapolitan pizzas, aperitivos, and a selection of desserts. Also opening in Eddington is Green Nest, the new name of Harvest, which we know from Mill Road.
And on the 29th of November, it's the Eddington Winter Warmer, which runs to the 1st of December with seasonal food, drink, a local maker's market and entertainments.
Cambridge Cheese Company, which, if you listen to our last programme, you'll know is celebrating its 30th birthday this month, has a gin and cheese tasting at the Cambridge Gin Lab on the 4th of December.
And it's the Mill Road Winter Fair on the 7th of December. Volunteers are needed. If you're interested or want more information, email volunteers@millroadwinterfair.org.
Let's nip over to Congratulations Corner now, and beaming away in there are Scots All Day and Maurizio Dining. So why are they so pleased? It's because they've both reached the final of the National Pizza Awards. Scots for its pepperoni and honey pot Detroit, and Maurizio for Lord Orley, their surf and turf pizza.
Also in Congratulations Corner is Norfolk Street Bakery, which is the county winner of the National Bakery Awards, and Daniel Clifford too of Midsummer House, which has just been awarded 5 rosettes for culinary excellence from AA Hospitality. And happy birthday to Fitzbillies, which was 104 years old yesterday. So our congratulations to all of them.
And we'll have more news shortly.
OK, now in 2016, Alan interviewed one of the founders of Olio. Olio, of course, is the free app that you download on your phone or your tablet, and it locates people close to you who are giving food away. Lots of people around the country are using Olio now. It's very community-focused, and it helps reduce food waste and landfill. One of the questions Alan asked Sasha, and Sasha is one of Olio's creators, the question was, who uses Olio? And she said that it was a real mixture of people. And that was my reason for seeking out a local Olio user who regularly appears in our Olio readouts when we do our Saturday lunchtime look at what's available.
Hello, I'm Will, and I work with Olio and collect food for people, which I give away.
Will Run visits supermarkets about 3 or 4 times a week, and they will give her their surplus food to take home and distribute to the public via this Olio app. So, for example,
at Tesco's, you collect at 8:30 in the evening, and all the Tesco's, the Expresses and the big ones, they all get rid of their food. They used to throw it away. Mm. And now they have got this new app where we come and collect. This is the Olio collection, but it started with Tesco's.
Yes.
So that is happening every day, and there are quite a lot of people who collect.
And over time, more supermarkets, more eateries, more cafes and shops have become involved, joining Olio and giving people like Will their surplus at the end of the day to distribute. A recent example would be Sainsbury's.
Sainsbury's at Coldham's Lane.
Yeah. Olio's influence is growing.
Tesco's is the one that you get most from. They are very generous.
Because Tesco's were the ones who combined with the Olio
founders. Yeah.
To make this initiative happen.
So I think it's a very good thing. And also Waitrose has come on board as well recently.
I wanted to meet Will because we've seen her name pop up so many times on Olio. And she's been distributing food for several years. As I arrived at her house, at her front gate, she regularly leaves a box containing fruit, bread, and other things for passers-by to collect as they want. Providing it's not been raining, of course. No one wants soggy bread. Okay, so here we are in your kitchen. This is just an example of some of the things that you've collected for distribution tonight.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Some salad, lots of pastries again.
So many pastries, yes, yeah.
I separate them all out. Then baguettes and 10 almond croissants and normal croissants, and I put them up individually so people can then request what they want.
Mm. And on the evening, so it's Friday evening tonight.
Yeah.
Surely everybody doesn't come along at once. I mean, that's a lot to deal with. And when people are saying, oh, I want this specifically, chicken and so on.
I ask them for a time of arrival. I tell them the time when I'm ready for it to be gone. And then people sort of choose that time. And that's fine. Then we get it all ready. We put it together. And then just when they come, we can just hand it over. Mm. And I've put them into plastic bags. I don't touch the pastries. I have tongs there. And I will use each pastry is taken by a tong and put in. But there's one problem because all the pastries go into one bag. Mm. And so we always have to make sure that the people who come haven't got a nut allergy. So they're on the app, it actually says, be careful, there's loose pastry, the allergen awareness.
So everyone has to be on their game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. Everybody needs to know, and you can't put anything out without a warning.
Mm.
You get all sorts of people coming, and some of them are more friendly and more polite than others.
Mm.
One thing I have found is that some people are very greedy. They will send you a message, I want it all.
Really?
Yeah. It's really interesting to see people in a different light because you don't realise that some people want to grab everything.
Gosh.
For example, last night I collected about 35 sandwiches and somebody said, I will take it off your hands. Even if you have a family of 5 or 6, you can't eat that many sandwiches.
Yes, yeah.
So I wrote back and I said, no, 5 maximum. Sometimes it brings the worst out of people.
Mm.
But then on the other hand, I had a lady who sort of asked, for me it was quite a lot, but I thought, well, it's all right. And she sent me a message afterwards and said, I'm just so grateful to you that you gave it to me because our fridge was empty. So you get those people and they make it worth your while.
Olio fills a gap, fills a need. In Will's experience, she finds that some people feel like they are owed rather than simply being happy to get something.
And I think sometimes people think just about themselves and not about others. And that's the sad thing with Olio, that some people who make it their mission to get everything. But then you get the good things where you have people coming and saying, oh, I'm just so thankful. And I had cards through the door saying, thank you so much for all you do.
Cards as well.
That makes it all worthwhile.
In a city like this, we're often mentioned in the media like we have the largest disparity between rich and poor in this city. Mm. And I guess you see the demand.
Yeah, very much so. In a way, it's sad to see a city that is so wealthy to have people here who have got hardly anything. It's just extremely sad. We really ought to make it our mission to help these people to come and get on their feet and be able to live like everybody else.
Yeah. I was reading the news yesterday and there was an article about firefighters and nurses, for example, that were living in their cars and vans in Cambridge because they can't afford the cost of living in this town to do their jobs, essential jobs.
But you look at the prices now just of having a room. It's horrendous.
Yes.
And also, it is very much a student town. If you look, it's a lot of international companies and so on. So you have got these guys with huge salaries and they really push up the prices of the flats and so on.
Yeah. The students must struggle as well, right? Yeah. Like they don't have infinite money.
That's why if I have sandwiches left over at night and I can't give them to people after 12 o'clock.
That's because the food has an expiry date of that day. That's why it's being given away free that evening.
I collect them all and I put them in the car and I take it to A&E for the doctors and the nurses there.
Even doctors?
Yesterday, the food I collected, I shared it with 10 other people. And I still got some here, so what I did was I put it all together and took it up to A&E to put in their staff room. And of course, because they don't have any open shops up there, so they're very grateful.
Yeah, their shops just close at times like normal shops close.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So there isn't anywhere where they can buy any food. Mm. So they're really happy to receive it.
So Olio can help all sorts of people.
It sort of fills a hole there, and they are very grateful and very thankful.
Do you get a lot of students?
Yes, mostly international students, actually. And they live in a sort of house share, and there are 7 or 8 of them. So they come and say, we're 7 people sharing the house. Can we have some pastries? Because they find it very difficult. And I had local students as well, and they said, oh, we just don't have the money to buy meat. So if there's sort of meat or anything left, they're so happy to have it. And also I get a lot of vegetarian and vegan stuff. Mm. And I've got 2 or 3 students that are just absolutely delighted to get it because they can't afford it because they are so expensive, the vegan stuff. I have 6 sausages in around about £4, £5.
Yeah.
And that's an awful lot of money for a student. There are people out there who need it. And in a way, it makes me very sad to think that there are people who are desperate. And I think it's really good. And it's really important that these things happen, that we share and that we are open with each other and help each other out.
Yeah, and that is the crux of Olio, helping each other out. Olio founder Sasha said that one of the big things that people like about Olio is the anonymity. You see the food that you want. You request it. You don't have to give any personal details. You're not pigeonholed. You simply go and collect it. And that's really good in this age where you're tracked remorselessly for your online activities. But here on the Olio app, it is just about sharing food.
Wine, wine, wine. Drink that wine. I always want to hear the rest of that track, you know. Wine, Wine, Wine by Supercharge, taking us into our wine news. Chong Chong Bo of Amphora has organised an impressive list of events, and these all take place at the Sidings in Station Tavern at the Station Square in Cambridge. On Tuesday, the 8th of October at 7 p.m, there's a chance to meet the winemaker Nontjibo Langer of Delheim Wines in Stellenbosch. Noni, as she is known, won South Africa's 2023 Diners Club Young Winemaker of the Year Award, and there will be a range of wines to taste. Tickets are £38.
On Wednesday, 16th October, there's another opportunity to taste more exotic varieties, which are indigenous to less well-known wine regions. That too starts at 7 p.m. and costs £38.
Also at Amphora, on Tuesday the 22nd of October at 7 p.m, it's part one in a two-part series exploring the influence of climate on wines. There's a look at full-bodied wines from warmer climes. And part two, called Elegant Wines from Cooler Climes, is on Wednesday the 30th of October.
Yeah, perhaps you should say that all the Amphora tastings take place at the Sidings in Station Tavern by Cambridge Station. Cambridge Wine Merchants has a tasting on the 7th of October at 6:30 in its Bridge Street branch. It will be led by Sophia Berquist, the owner of the Quinta de la Rosary winery in Portugal, and she'll have a range of whites and reds and ports from the Douro Valley to taste. Tickets are £20, light nibbles are included, but there are only 12 places available, so by now you may need to see if there are any cancellations.
Cambridge Wine also has an art and wine evening at the Fenderton Gallery with three wines to try. It's on 16th October from 6 to 8 p.m. and costs £10.
And at the King's Parade branch on the 18th of October, there is a collaboration tasting between Cambridge Wine Merchants and Fitzbillies with sweet wine tastings. The cost for that is £25.
Gutter and Start in French's Road has tastings of five wines from its range on the 7th of November and the 21st of November. These sell out, so best to book now. And the tastings run from 6:30 to 7:30. Their cost is £30.
Great Britannia in Chesterton Road has a tasting of the 2014 vintages on the 9th of October. The cost is £35. 2014 was one of the best vintages of the last decade for English wines, and this is a rare opportunity to try them.
Thorn Wines is taking orders for Domaine de la Cuvette Beaujolais Nouveau to celebrate Beaujolais Nouveau Day, which, according to custom, is the third Thursday of November. So this year, on the 21st of November, though you can really celebrate whenever you like, the wine apparently pairs excellently with pizza, hard cheese, cured meats. It's even delicious on its own. Orders are for a minimum of six bottles, and the orders must be in by the 10th of October. The cost for a case of six is £96, and that dispatch process will begin on the 21st of November.
Are you a fan of Beaujolais Nouveau?
If I get a chance to try it, yes, but I'm much more of a white wine than a red wine.
Yes, I remember you saying, actually.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. But, en primeur, as it were, sort of nouveau wine, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's always interesting to taste the vintage.
There's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Yeah, Culinaris has got some extraordinary chocolate available. Now, things like plum brandy chocolate, fig and port. Fig and port chocolate. Tremendous. Chestnuts and rum. All sorts of interesting things. And Culinaris also have La Vita plums, which I don't know. Do you know La Vita plums?
They look nice. I can see them on the feed.
They look like beetroot.
They do. That's what I was thinking.
And the tea apothecary is now doing takeaway teas.
Oh, good.
You were there recently.
I was.
Solan Duck are having a thorn wine evening wines from South Africa, Vondeling Wines. That's on the 8th of October at 7:30, and there are still some places available for that. And Tristan Welch, when I was talking to him, said how much he enjoys Thorn Wines.
Yes.
And I must say, they are very good. Midsummer House has got an award from... that's the second award they've had today. Yeah. A notable wine list award from the AA and Bibendum. And finally, the Three Hills at Bartlow have got two AA rosettes for culinary excellence. So well done to them.
Congratulations all.
And that's the up-to-date social media news. Well, we've got a bit of time and we've got a copy of The Guardian's Feast magazine. And today it's a special. It's about cooking with beans and pulses. And there's a few things that interest you, Sue, in it.
Oh, indeed. And I'm a real fan of beans and pulses. And I've got a number of tins in my cupboard, but I've also got a lot of dried pulses. I sort of tend to sort of buy them in waves, as it were, and then get into using them. So I'm really pleased to see some good recipes in here. And there was one that I came across, which is by Georgina Hayden, and it's about Foule Madame. And Foule Madame is basically a breakfast dish in part of the Middle East, made typically with fava beans, but you can use other beans as well. And I came across it and knew about it when I went on my one and only but lovely cruise down the Nile with family. And normally for breakfast, you know, on cruises they serve the typical English stuff. And I thought, ruddy hell, you know, I'm in Egypt. I want to try the local breakfast. And so therefore I said, oh, you know, could I have some Foule Madame? They sort of looked at me as if, you know, who's this strange foreigner person that actually wants our breakfast? Because it was the cruise breakfast. And they said, well, yes, you can have some Foule Madames, madame. And so I had them for breakfast every single day. And they were gorgeous. They were so nice.
Well, the ingredients are very straightforward. Yeah. So presumably it's reasonably easy to make.
Well, now I've got a decent recipe here. Thank you, Georgina. I'm going to have a go at making them. So it's just literally olives, olive oil, onion, garlic cloves, cumin, fava beans or cannellini or bolotti, and then sea salt or black pepper, and then a chili-based dressing.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's nice. Very straightforward. One of the things in this feast today I must mention is Grace Dent's restaurant review. It's a review of a restaurant in Birmingham, which she says is one of the best 5 seafood places in the UK today. And it's called Albatross Death Cult.
Sounds like a band.
It's a great name for a restaurant. She's such a good writer. And a little while ago, she wrote an article about what it's like being a restaurant reviewer. A little bit of it here says, "My weight is never steady. I've been much bigger and smaller. Nowadays, to stay at a UK size 10 at 6 a.m. every morning, an app on my phone called Happy Scale tells me time for your weigh in. I comply, standing on electronic scales while shouting expletives. There's nothing happy about this experience. Take last Saturday when I ate a Middle Eastern metze breakfast, date loaf shakshuka, a Somali feast at lunch with pasta and rice, and Uzbekistan dumplings for dinner, and then arrived home to a gift of bespoke Bakewell tart brownies. That's 4,000 calories in under 12 hours. So I walk a minimum of 6 miles a day, I lift weights, and I am now 3 years teetotal because previously, every time I went to a restaurant, the maitre d' would send me a free martini. My biggest tip is learn how to say no, or at least re-gift little presents pushed in your hands by strangers and to extra courses at dinner and to free hampers left on your doorstep. I use the Olio app to redistribute extra goodies after I've tasted a fraction. These days, I only review with regular dinner dates who have massive appetites. Thank you, Charles, Hugh and Tom. All men whom I require no social battery to dine with, who will let me try a taste of 11 dishes and then polish off what's left. They are the reason I still have both feet. And after a day or two of feasting, there's the compulsory fast. On down days, I roam the house like a giant guinea pig, surviving on water, oats and seeds, trying to claw back calories, but sometimes still snacking on cooking chocolate while standing at the cupboard. It's still the greatest job in the entire world. I plan to carry on forever and inevitably die trying.
Wow, that's impressive, isn't it? Well done, her. Yeah. Ooh.
And that's Booker T and the MGs with Green Onions taking us into our jobs section. And first up, Cousins in Newnham is looking for a full-time butcher. Just pop in for details.
Small Town Bread in Sawson has vacancies for experienced baristas and front-of-house team members.
A sous chef is needed at Amelie at Ben's Yard in Soham Road, Ely. Senior sous chefs at Cambridge Dining Company and the Tickle Arms as well. Also, St John's College wants a junior sous chef.
Chefs de Partie are needed at Market House, Smokeworks, Trinity College, St Catherine's College, where the work will be in the pastry section, and Darwin College too.
And chefs are needed at Cam's Cuisine and the new Everyman Cinema, which opens on the Grand Arcade in November. Want chefs. Training for the role starts this month, so applications are very welcome now. The Olive Tree in Oakington Garden Centre wants chefs, and pizza chefs are needed at both Aromi and Oscar's Lockdown Pizza.
And that takes us to the end of the programme for today. Don't forget we are here on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon, repeated on Mondays at 2 p.m. And we're also available as a podcast from all the usual places.
But that's all from us today. And after the news at 1 p.m. are Rob Chipperfield and Lawrence Micheleff with Gadget Guide. Sue Marchand's selection is at 2. We'll be back on the 19th of October with lots more food and drink, news, jobs and features. And until then, goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Something.